Today is Thursday. It's March 22nd, 2018. It's 11:13 in the morning. I'm John Williams. It just dawns on me. We normally start these around 11:11 or 11:12. I was delayed. I was taking a congratulatory call from the President of the United States. He did Putin, and then he did me. Anyway,
I saw that dance video. It said, do not congratulate.
More about that in a moment. First, remember, if you think this podcast is swell, please tell your friends and listen to me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN and the most frequent audience of John's dancing stories.
Krista McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune editorial board and a huge fan of the dance-off, Mr. King John Williams, in Friday's performance.
I'm Eric Zorn, the tough guy columnist from the Tribune.
Tough guy?
Tough guy, yeah.
Who called you that?
I'm going to, because I'm in a fighting mood because of Trump's challenge to Biden's challenge to Trump.
I didn't know what Joe Biden said. I caught that story midway. I know the president said that Joe Biden is weak mentally and physically, and he better not pick a fight on him.
He'll go down crying.
Because he'll go down crying. But I don't know what provoked that.
Biden, he repeated right what he said. If he was in high school, he'd take him out back and beat him up.
Yeah.
Well, he shouldn't have said it.
Biden shouldn't have said that. Yeah.
I mean, you
can't, when you're a president of the United States, you just can't rise to every provocation like that.
No, but if you're the former vice president, you shouldn't speak in a way that you wouldn't want your president
spoken of. But I could beat both of them.
By the way, we didn't, we're chit-chatting before what we're talking about. Do we all know that John Dowd quit today?
Yeah, I just saw that walking in. The chief counsel, personal lawyer for the president on these investigations, resigned today, and I didn't see why.
He's no Joe DeGeneva.
Joey D, as we call him. And I don't know if it's because Joey D's on board that he said, okay, then I'm not going to be party to this. I don't know what his
rationale. He's supposed to be reaching out to Ted Olson, too.
Olson said no.
Olson did say no.
That's what I was told. Yeah, what I was told.
Maybe
that's
I'm on your show.
Look at you.
That's what I watched on TV.
Stephen doesn't like all of the trivial Trump talk, so let's get to that later in the podcast. I want to start with, as we did yesterday, perhaps you heard the podcast we did as a special on Wednesday after Tuesday's vote, but we talked a little bit about it then, and I want to talk about it on our regular podcast today. First, I'll play for you guys the Jeannie Ives ad.
Stay tuned for a special message.
We want to say thank you.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner.
Thank you for signing legislation that lets me use the girls' bathroom.
Thank you for making all Illinois families pay for my abortions.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for opposing law enforcement and making Illinois a sanctuary state for illegal immigrant criminals.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for the taxpayer bailout of Exelon with the largest electricity rate hike in U.S. history.
Thank you for making the rest of Illinois bail out Chicago teacher pensions and for giving Rahm everything he wanted and more.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for not being in charge, leaving Mike Madigan in charge.
I am not in charge. I'm trying to get to be in charge.
Thank you for being the worst Republican governor in the country.
Rauner caved on all 44 points he promised in the campaign. Even the call for a tax cut became a state record for a tax increase.
Thank you for betraying Illinois Republicans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kristen, let's start with you. Did the Jeannie Ives ad, the one where she has all of those people saying all of those crazy things, help or hurt her in the election?
Can I say both? Can I say both, that it helped? It helped wake up the electorate to who she was, because outside of Chicago, nobody knew who Jeannie Ives was. But I think the support for Rauner, people held their noses and voted for Rauner, even though he barely won, because there was a discomfort with her putting that out there and then, considering her viability for November.
So it was kind of like a fatal potion. It got her to the lip of success, but also prevented her from reaching success
of her campaign.
I think so. I mean, I think by the time voters got into the voting booth, they sort of had forgotten about it. And if you pick apart the ad in its entirety, there were only a couple. I mean, it was actually mocking Rauner's positions on a lot of these bills that Republicans, by and large, did not support. But, just like I've written some things that have been misinterpreted or I used a metaphor that did not work in a Hurricane Katrina column, and I have to own that. I feel like she sort of has to own
the tone. She stood by that. She never said that was a misrepresentation.
No, she didn't.
Of her views or her tone, she didn't back away from any of it.
That's right. But I think it was when you have to spend, as she did, 5 or 6 days after that first aired explaining it, that's not a successful political ad, in my opinion.
So here's the only question then. Did it get her more votes or less votes? Would she have had more votes without that ad?
No, actually, I don't think so.
Yeah, see, I think
that's the thing. It helped her. So, I mean, when we kicked this around the other day, I said it hurt the party, it hurt the state, it hurt the people, it hurt her. It helped her. It helped her, I think. I'm just sorry that that's the tactic that she would resort to.
I disagree. I disagreed with this yesterday. I think that she was making some inroads. She had done very well in the debate at the Tribune. It was like, no, it's not official debate. When she squared off with Rauner, and there was a better way for her to introduce herself as a strong social conservative than to frighten some of these moderate Republican voters into thinking she was a whack job. And I think it did cost her votes. Not necessarily positive that it would have moved 10,000 votes either way. But I think that was a tactical mistake. And if she says she wouldn't do it again, then her political acumen is...
So you say hurt her. At the end of the day...
At the end of the day, I think it hurt her.
Hurt her. I say helped her. You say probably helped her. Mm-hmm. As much as we don't like it.
I'm going to do a hybrid because I think it did help her, but I think it probably also was a catalytic converter, which prevented her from getting the vital support
she
needed.
See, that's my Sarah Palin. Do you understand my analogy? I think that John McCain's campaign was never going to be as successful as it was were it not for Sarah Palin. But Sarah Palin also ensured that he wouldn't win.
That's kind of what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
There was a limit to her reach, and she started to overstep it towards the end of the campaign.
Well, there was a limit to her reach that she overstepped when she accepted, but we didn't know about it.
The rallies blew up when Sarah Palin started going to John McCain rallies.
Yes.
And you know, they were competing with Barack Obama. He was a rock star. But really, Sarah Palin was what energized the masses, the same way that ad did. But maybe it would ultimately keep some people from imagining her in the White House. Okay. Andrea Arela, does she get a do-over?
She should. I don't see how, if this goes through the court system, how she could not. I mean, she followed the election code. There is a timetable that doesn't work within the state law that lawmakers write, because of course it helps incumbents, but she was a challenger. She had every right to try to fight to stay on the ballot. And the fact that they kept screwing up at every turn, there's no way you could argue that her due process rights were not violated.
What is the standard, though? She was on with John this week, but what is the standard not that she would have to prove a reasonable or possible success in order to get a revote? And she was pretty far short.
I don't know if she has to prove that her success was hampered or that her just due process rights were violated.
She couldn't get a do-over if she proved that only one voter was turned away,
but
right? So there must be a standard.
There's no way to prove it because early voting started weeks. She already lost out on all the early voting because at that point she was off. Then she was on, but there were the signs put up in polling places saying don't vote for her. I mean, election authorities screwed up. The state law doesn't work. It doesn't let you get through the whole appeal process before election day comes around.
So, yeah, but I have the same question Steve does. What is the standard for having a new election? Because I haven't heard of this happening elsewhere where someone gets a new election because there were irregularities in the voting process.
Well, you can't prove a negative in this, though, Eric. I mean, you could say, Steve, Eric, that she didn't really get that many votes, but how do we know?
I know, but
about
there has
the votes
to be,
that she didn't get.
But if you're a judge, there's got to be some standard by which you
decide. She got one vote, but in theory, a million people would have voted for.
If T.O. Hardiman, if this were T.O. Hardiman and he got 1% of the vote, you just say, well, hey, you know, those are the breaks, T.O., right? Because he's but and in this case, it's an interesting call because she got 20% of the vote, more or less, right?
Right.
And Fritz Kagi got 45% of the vote. If this were really close, if they were within a couple thousand votes of each other, the democracy itself would absolutely demand a do-over. At this point, I don't know I don't know what the law is. I don't know what precedent is on getting a new election. Clearly, though, I mean, I agree with Kristen. She got hosed. I mean, there's no way around it.
How onerous? How How onerous is a re-election anyway? A re-vote for that specific race?
Oh, it'd be very expensive. Opening up all the precincts?
I don't know.
Millions of dollars.
What do you care? It would cost how many dollars?
To do another election?
For just that one race?
Okay. Well, I mean, they have to do everything except to have fewer dots on the ballot.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's exactly what
we're all going to go to the polling places.
Throughout all of Cook County.
If you pulled a Democrat ballot, you're now going to be asked one question. Which of these three candidates do you want to be Cook County assessor?
So you have to vote in the do-over. You have to prove you voted as a Democrat in the primary.
I don't know the... She doesn't know the answer to that question. Is everybody eligible to this or only people that voted
previously?
Well,
that's a really good point. Well, because you could have argued that they came into the polling place, saw the sign, and then decided...
Or they decided not to because they were told they couldn't vote for the candidate of their choice.
Okay, so she was on with you and was demanding a federal investigation.
Steve, I want to insert this just real quick. If you're listening to this podcast and aren't sure who Andrea Rayla is, we're talking about the Cook County Assessor's Office. Joe Berrios is the incumbent. There's Fritz Kagi and Andrea Rayla. Rayla, as Kristen pointed out, was the object of flyers that were posted by the governing body of the election saying she's ineligible.
Either mistakenly or takenly.
Yeah. I think it was an honest mistake.
No, on election day, it was a mistake. Before the during early voting, it was accurate. For much of early voting, it was accurate. And then partway through early voting about a week ago, maybe a week ago Tuesday.
6 days before the election.
Are you super sure that some of these Democratic bosses who were done with Berrios didn't want those flyers up?
No, we're not sure of anything. But in her, so she went to court on election day saying, number one, she wanted a restraining order on the election, which is obviously not going to happen. Number two, she wanted the election results to be void. That's not going to happen. But number three, she wants a special election. She also is still not she's still not through the process. She got to the appellate court. The appellate court said, put her back on. Kagi could go back and appeal that. Like, she still needs to get a ruling that she deserves to be on the ballot. But if she gets that, then I think they have to call a special election.
Currently, that's where she is. But Kagi could appeal that, and the higher court could yet say, in fact, she should not have been on the ballot?
Correct.
So you're saying there's a scenario where she might have won, Kagi could have appealed the appellate court, and then the winner of the primary could have been declared ineligible for the ballot.
In theory, right.
She won the voting
in the primary, and she won at the appellate court level, right? But then Kagi appeals the appellate court ruling post-primary voting. She could be knocked off the ballot after having won the primary.
I don't think that you can even... I think it's moot. You first have to figure out what her case is. Does she deserve to be on the ballot or not? And that, the appellate court said yes. And so if Kagi doesn't appeal that, then I think you have to move forward that she deserved to be on the ballot.
Then does Joe Berrios have a claim and say, well, okay, if she didn't deserve to be on the ballot,
yes,
I could have had the lion's share of those 20,000 votes or 20% of the vote, and that would have put me ahead of Kagi.
Put it this way, Eric.
Although I don't think that's
the case. Let's just put the three names on the ballot and do a do-over. Would the results change?
First of all, you'd have just one election, so you're not going to get even the pathetic turnout that we have for primary elections. You're going to get an even much, much smaller turnout.
It would help Berrios because he'd be organized.
It would help those who are
Berrios could win a do-over.
Well, you're functioning. The campaign is drawing toward Election Day, and it's geared up toward momentum and all of that to then have people vote on another day when you're not orchestrated that way, when the weather might be different. I don't know.
I think the will of the people, which is what elections try and discern, is Fritz Kagi. That's who people wanted. They don't want Joe Berrios. People voted for Fritz because they thought he was more viable than Andrea, and it was anybody but Berrios. So Fritz is your default candidate, and he wins. I think that was the will of the people. But I'm really sanctimonious about this, democracy and the authenticity of the vote. If you are going in to vote and you want to vote for Andrea Rayla and they hand you a sheet of paper that says it won't count, I just think that's game over. Then she gets a redo if it's determined that she was a legitimate candidate.
I agree. I don't see how they can rule otherwise. Again, maybe the standard is different.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to drag on for a while.
Well, we can certainly agree that this is completely screwed up and that the process has to change next time. This can't happen again.
Yeah.
They have to figure out some drop-dead deadlines for petition challenges and rulings in courts. And then when they hit that deadline, that's it. No more appeals to courts or higher. And we also need to get our court system working faster, that they need to have these appeals handled more expeditiously. It is ridiculous. This is completely appalling what has happened here.
Okay, how about this? In Cook County, you were also asked if you want marijuana to be recreationally legal. 68%, 7 out of 10 said, yeah, let's have legal recreational marijuana in Cook County. Are you all surprised by that rule, by that number, 7 out of 10?
No, but also these advisory referendums are silly. I wish everyone just voted no so that they would stop doing it. They put an advisory referendum on. I've never really seen an advisory referendum directly lead to legislation. It's actually a way to take up space on the ballot so a legitimate question couldn't be furthered there. I don't remember how that one was worded.
It was leading is what it was.
They were all loaded to me. You know, it was like, do you want health care for poor people or do you want to kick them out into the street and watch them suffer and die?
Freedom-loving Americans. Yeah.
They're just silly. So we can... Was I surprised?
By the way,
no.
That was the exact wording of one of the referenda. It was exactly what you just said. They were kind of like that. It's like, well, who in the world would be for... bump stocks to lead for more slaughter in schools, but that's kind of the way they're working.
Still, I think legalization is inevitable. We're on the road to it. We saw here that even with a loaded question, an overwhelming majority of Cook County voters, 3 in 10 who showed up, thought it was a good idea. J.B. Pritzker, in his first interview with Cranes afterward, brought up the money that would be raised by legalizing marijuana. So, I mean, I think it's going to happen.
I would like to have seen a really nice, robust debate over this issue, because nobody was talking about it. We didn't editorialize about it. I didn't write a column about it. I just didn't feel like it was an issue people were thinking about or talking about. So if you just ask somebody randomly, like, what do you think? I mean, my answer to that is like, well, I kind of want to know more about this. I haven't really thought about it much, actually, to tell you the truth.
Well, in the Tribune today being Thursday the 22nd, Robert McCoppin wrote a piece about this, and he said it depends on how you ask the question. If you do it the way they did on the ballot, 68% of the people say, yeah, I like recreational marijuana. I've already got legalized it for medical purposes. But then if you ask it in a different way, you can get a number as low as less than 25%. You know, it just depends on how the question is put and are other questions asked around it that sort of shape the opinion of the person. So I really don't know what people think. But I had a moment of truth because here I am, the liberal talk show host, and I'm going, legalize it for one thing that'll keep people out of jail that shouldn't be going to jail. Let's take the revenue. Let's stop putting people in jail or criminalizing something that's no worse than my cocktail at night. And then I had to sit there and vote. And I didn't vote for it because I don't know if I want us to go down that path. It just seems to me like we're inviting the use of something that nobody really benefits from and who knows where it would lead to. And I
think a lot of people benefit from it.
My brain went that way.
And people certainly medically benefit from it, anxiety-wise.
I'm for medical
marijuana.
We have
that. We have medical.
I mean, do you benefit from your cocktail at night?
I enjoy it, sure.
Okay, so, I mean, I think people would benefit from a brownie, too.
But the world would be better if there wasn't vodka.
Really? I like it better after you've had one.
I think we have to move slowly. And so far, we are. The sponsors of the legislation in Springfield have really done their homework in terms of comparing mistakes other states have made and making sure. I just want to see the revenue tied to something. Don't give Springfield another blank check. If you're going to legalize recreational use of marijuana, that revenue needs to go directly into paying down our pensions, paying down our bill backlog, something. I do not want to see just another like pork barrel extravaganza in Springfield, which is probably what would happen.
Well, show of hands in 10 years, who here doesn't think it's going to be legal?
Show of hands, that works really well on a podcast.
Will we have legalized recreational marijuana
years, yes.
in Illinois?
We will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will. So let's get started.
if it's really important.
And I don't smoke pot, honest to God, I don't. And
Kristen does.
I don't, actually. I would be 500 pounds. They're going to have to like ban Cheetos. But if it's really I don't know how important it is to voters, but this is like Governor Rauner is very, very, it was hard to get him to sign the medical marijuana. I don't think he would support recreational.
So
Pritzker would. So there's a contrast between the candidates.
Yeah, so maybe you will get your debate, Eric.
I would like to see that debate. I really would.
The cost of this gubernatorial race was probably $100 million between what Pritzker and Rauner put into it.
Give or take.
And your friend Rex Hupke.
And you don't smoke.
He's the host of a very fine podcast here on WGN Plus.
He said that he pointed out that estimates are that the race will cost $300 million and that the ads are already starting and that they're ugly. What's your sort of prediction, Eric, for what it's all going to be like between now and November?
It's going to be Rauner's going to be Madigan. It's all Madigan's fault. Pritzker is Madigan's handpicked crony, corrupt, bad Madigan. That's what's going to be his message, and we're going to see that over and over again. And I don't know. And Pritzker's going to be hammering back on Rauner as a failure. That's what, and what it's going to be. And we're going to all be sick of it. If we're not already sick of that stuff, we'll be sick of it by Memorial.
Has anybody tried to log on to a computer that you didn't see a J.B. Pritzker ad? I mean, it's amazing to me. The pre-rolls, whenever I go to watch a CNN video or a YouTube video, there's a J.B. Pritzker ad. It's amazing to me how coordinated and comprehensive his social media takeover was at the primary level. Can you imagine what it's going to be like between now and November? If I'm his kids, though, I'm like, hey, Dad, I know we're rich, but are you sure? Are you sure? Because he had an adorable kid standing next to him on stage after he won the primary. And if I'm that kid, I'm just going, hello.
I think the Pritzkers will be okay.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to be an issue.
What a vanity project.
Do you think
though?
The Madigan thing, though, will wear thin? I mean, the governor's been saying it for 4 years now. He's been saying Madigan, and it hasn't really worked for him yet. I just wonder if there's a fatigue there.
Oh, yes. Read Sunday's editorial. And actually, it's not any. 4 months ago, we said, quit your whining.
Right.
There's a reason that broken records don't sell.
Ooh, I like that.
Look at that Sunday's editorial. Like we got a little tease there.
This coming Sunday's editorial? Or did you mean last Sunday's
this
editorial?
This Sunday, and it will be online probably this preview. Afternoon.
Danny Lipinski's challenger in the 3rd Congressional District in the southwest suburbs in November will be a Holocaust denier. A Jewish friend of mine in Minneapolis sent me a screen grab the other day of him on CNN and said, WTF Chicago. And I wrote her back and said, don't worry, he's not legitimate or significant. And she said, it is if you're Jewish. And she wasn't kidding. I didn't talk about this guy. He's not a Republican. The Republican Party's going to support the independent and advertise against a guy who's running under their masthead. I don't know. What box do we put this in? Eric, does it matter at all? Is he significant?
I don't think it matters in Illinois and around here because I think people around here do understand what happened, that the Republican Party just fell asleep at the switch and didn't put anybody forward in time for that primary because they had basically conceded the 3rd Congressional District
to
Democrats. It's I guess they should have seen it coming. But so we all know what happened. It was just like, the state party had its eye off the ball. But when you're talking about the national scene, when cable talk shows are talking about the Republican Party has got a Holocaust denier running, I think it does hurt the party nationally.
This is a guy, though, they did challenge his petitions. He actually went out and collected signatures and filed them legally. There was nothing to challenge. He's done this before. They looked at his signatures. So, I mean, I guess they could have done like more of a knockdown drag out with him. But again, this is how our democracy works. He's super offensive, but he legally collected signatures and got himself on the ballot. What do you want to do?
Doesn't that tell you something about the petition process that some people will just sign anything to get someone off
their
porch?
Yes.
I mean, he had to get enough signatures. And then how many people voted for this guy? Was it like
20,000?
20,000 people actually voted for
him. But they didn't know.
They sign petitions. They don't know. They see the R. They don't know. I mean, voters, we were talking, I believe, that, at least voters didn't just automatically vote for Pat Quinn, right? Which would have been. I mean, I like Pat, it's fine, but I think that the only reason he had a chance was because he counted on voters going, let's see, I don't know his name.
Well, he only won by like 3 points.
I know, it's like, and then they go, Pat Quinn, I've heard that.
Either because they knew him or they had him on the bingo card and they only had two more squares to fill in. But, any time a politician or anyone tells you that the voters get it right, kick them in the teeth because the voters don't always get it right. Just don't. And this is just a case of it. You know?
And as Eric wrote, they have to you have to take a 2x4 and bang them over the head for them to do something like oust Berrios. So, yeah, I hate that he's on the ballot, but at the same time, this is how democracy works.
He's no Mark Fairchild, right? Or he's no, who's the other LaRouche? Sheila?
Janice
Hart? No.
Something like that.
I don't know, I was
Here's
seven.
A journalism question for you guys. Steve asked this the other day. We were talking about Kwame Raoul and the Republican challenger, a woman from downstate.
Erica Harold.
Who is a former Miss America, a Harvard grad. She won the Harvard competition. She's like, what a resume, right? And the question, I think, Steve, you sort of posed.
Well, I mean, it's always the first attribute that it is used to describe her is that she's a former Miss America. And so I wonder if that's appropriate. I pause when I say it. I try not to say it. But it was also pointed out that that's what she uses.
Yeah, but you know, when you said that in your defense the other day, or just talk, we were just having this conversation, and I thought, well, because she uses it doesn't mean you should use it. I mean, certainly it's not pejorative. I think it's a boosterism kind of thing that you don't need to adopt. So it's unique. It's interesting that she's a former Miss America Harvard. I think putting Harvard grad in there is also Harvard Law School grad.
I see that more often about her.
But you say State Senator Kwame Raoul running against, give me a
Harvard educated.
But if you were like a Heisman Trophy winner or something, that would be in there too.
And I, you're right. And it was.
She won the Heisman Trophy.
No, no, I'm just saying on the male side, if there were someone running who was like a Heisman Trophy winner, that would probably be used to describe them.
Well, it was the State Senator on the South Side, right? Was a Heisman Trophy winner. And that was used.
Napoleon Harris, maybe?
Was he Heisman?
I don't know if he was
no,
a
he
Heisman.
Wasn't a Heisman Trophy winner.
But to your point, I agree. She uses it all the time. She posts pictures. She tweets about it, about being Miss America. So I think it's completely fair game.
It doesn't hurt her chances in any way. It doesn't, you know, trivialize her.
Which Democrat, Kristen may remember this, but some Democrat dismissed her.
Kwame.
Was it Kwame? That's what I thought.
The one who's now running against her. He said something. He kind of dismissed like, oh, you think I'm worried about the Miss America?
He calls her Miss America condescendingly.
But then he apologized.
I do think it would hurt her among many voters.
Why?
Because I think because it's a beauty. And I'm not saying this is my view. People are going to look at it. It's a bubblegum beauty pageant.
She was 20 years old. And I mean, I don't think you can hold that against her that she was in.
I'm not saying I'm saying there are voters who will hear that and it won't be. I'm Harvard educated will count more.
She's not like that Miss Teen USA.
No, but
woman.
Do this, Eric. I'm going to tell you about a candidate, and I'm only going to give you one fact about her. Tell me if you're going to vote for
her. Okay, that's fair enough.
She's Miss America.
Okay,
she's Miss America.
Okay.
Will you vote for
that
her?
That would disincline me.
General.
That would disincline me slightly on that.
Well,
but he would Google the swimsuit competition and then make up his mind.
They don't do that anymore.
I know, but they did when she was in it.
By the way, I just asked.
I don't even know if they don't do it anymore.
That's why I don't watch.
What do we need to talk about the president and everything going on in Washington? I've got 42 notes, and the only one that seems to me that really needs to matter is the Mueller investigation and whether or not the president's going to fire him. That his lead attorney quit today maybe means that there's some sort of internal strife along that line. I don't know. But the stuff about all of the women who are alleging affairs or some sort of harassment, I don't think is important.
If they can demonstrate that here is people threatened her. I think that's one of the allegations with Stormy Daniels, that she was threatened.
But physically threatened.
Sure, but the funnel I run any of these things through, I mean, all of that's embarrassing and damning, but if it doesn't lead to impeachment, that's my rubric here, then it doesn't matter.
Or indictment, yeah. No.
Right.
You've got this, what's the show? The Apprentice, candidate.
Well, there's Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice, Celebrity All-Stars.
Whatever.
Which
synapses are firing?
Who's suing him and who won a round in court?
There's three of them now.
No, but this is in court. It's a lawsuit, and the judge said that he, even though he's a sitting president, can be sued over this defamation, which could force him to give, you know, testimony to it. So, I think there could be damaging stuff there.
I think it's a news story, but I just don't think it's on the top of the heap. I think it's halfway up there.
Boy, I think they're worried about it. I think they're worried about the Stormy Daniels stuff and the National Enquirer story coming out.
Kristen, put it in some perspective.
What are you going to be doing Sunday? What are you going to be doing Sunday?
You asking me this question?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What is?
Because of the Stormy Daniels interview on 60 Minutes.
Oh, I am interested.
My gosh.
Listen,
Such
Steve,
garbage.
My interest in that
Such
is
garbage.
You can be both. You can be intrigued and fascinated. It is. It's really compelling. I'm just saying it's not
going to bring him down.
No. I can't sit and listen to all this stuff about, you know, consensual relationships, supposedly, between the two of them versus what we tolerated with Bill Clinton. And we still, you know, we're still jovial about he's still on our list of favorite presidents, if you ask people. And so I can't deal with this double standard. And I really don't care. Let's focus on Mueller. Let's, you know, go after whatever we think might actually be impeachable. But we elected him. We knew he had a past of being an adulterer based on the fact that he's been married three times. And I think he cheated on me twice.
He wrote about it in his books.
Move on.
Yeah.
Move on.
I am with Kristen to the extent that I'm much more interested in what's going on with Mueller and the threat that he's going to fire Mueller.
No, I'm more interested in the salacious stuff. I'm just saying it doesn't matter.
Can we just pull the audio of Kristen saying move on, because it might get her in the group. Maybe you could join the group move on. That sounds
That's
where the organization takes its name, right? It started during the whole Clinton impeachment stuff.
Do you have to have the pink pea hat to be in move
I've got
on?
One in the car.
I think you do.
Before we go to our
recommendations,
do you want to finish that thought, Eric? Inconsiderately cut you off.
No, I think he cut me off too late, actually.
Steve, I'll go first this time. I never do. Berlin.
Yeah, you're liking it?
I'm watching it. Yeah,
yeah. We talked about it before, right?
Yeah, well, you recommended it, and I don't know that I did as well, but there's a TV show on Netflix.
You have to
know.
And
it's called Berlin, and it's subtitled, so you can't multitask. You have to look at the screen to watch this.
It's actually called Babylon Berlin.
Babylon Berlin, and it's about, what is it about?
It's set between the world wars, so you see like this sort of liberalism in Berlin, but also the threat from the communists. But really, it's a cop drama. It's a cop show.
I suppose so, but against the backdrop of the rise of the Nazis, and you get a sense of how supranationalistic they were and why. It's abhorrent, but you right. feel it, and it's fascinating. Okay, that's my
recommendation. It's the underside of The Sound of Music.
It's the B-side.
I'm watching now. I just started season 2 last night, Sneaky Pete, which is a show on Amazon, Giovanni Ribisi, I think, mm-hmm. and he's a con man. And the season 1 was he's in prison, and his cellmate tells him all the stories, and he escapes from prison. He's got to hide from people who want him dead, so he assumes the identity of his cellmate and ingratiates himself to the cellmate's family. They fall for it, the grandparents and all this stuff. So there's mayhem ensues in season 1. Season 2 has just started, and it's pretty good. First episode was more violent than I would like, but it's all about con men, and it's a Giovanni Ribisi is pretty good to watch.
Sneaky Pete is on
Amazon.
Kristen.
Nothing. I have watched zero TV. I will watch Loyola basketball tonight.
Yes,
that's it. That's all I got.
I know. Hopefully, as people continue to listen to this podcast after today's date, the Ramblers will still be in it. I don't even have my Harry Potter scarf. The scarf that everybody's wearing.
I'll watch the Loyola game until the Michigan game starts, at which point I will switch over.
Wow.
Watch it. I'm like the last person maybe in America to watch The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. You watch that?
I'm trying to remember
Never
now.
Watched it, but
Brenda
I've
watched it, and I was in the room when it was happening, is how I consume a lot of shows. Handmaid's Tale? I
recommend that, yes. I'm 6 episodes into it, so.
That's Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and Steve Bertrand. Scott Santis joins us often. He could not today, but we thank them all for being part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. Share this with your friends. Remember, you can hear me, John Williams, weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon. Ben Cortez is the engineer. Thank you, Benji. And the Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.